You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
We don't go in there. You don't want to go in there.
There's a reason that chamber has no door.
What did she tell you? That it must have been a dream?
Rookie mistake, Doc!
Turn it up to 11 with Flask. Let's see what she's got. And smoke me a kipper. I'll be back for breakfast.
No, Doc, it's a rational transaction. One life for billions.
If you think that's impressive, wait until I get going. The answer's 1 plus 2 plus 1 plus 1.
You must be truly desperate to come to me for help. Ugly.
Dr. Geek's Laboratory of Applied Geekdom, Season 3, coming soon.
Hey folks, it's time for the Pro Wrestling Roundtable. As always, we talk about wrestling past, present, and future. And this time, we're going to talk about the future. I mean, the present and maybe the future. As we talk about the general situation with wrestling at this point, at least, you know, a few subjects. We can't cover it all. And we also have an interview with the comic artist and writer, Box Brown, as he's done a couple of great graphic novels on Andre the Giant and the most recent one about not Roddy Piper, but Andy Kaufman. That's an inside joke, folks. And so sit back and give a listen, and we will try to entertain you and inform you.
And try not to get hit by the train. Coming through your living room.
Hey gang, are you looking for another podcast to listen to? Well, you're in luck. The Nerdy Laser Podcast is available on iTunes and SoundCloud for your listening enjoyment. On the Nerdy Laser Podcast, we talk about everything from Saved by the Bell to Jean-Claude Van Damme. Nothing is off limits. If we like it, we're going to talk about it. So join myself, Richard Yule, with a variety of guests on the Nerdy Laser Podcast, available on SoundCloud and iTunes. Also, follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Nerdy Laser. Thanks! Welcome back to the show, everybody, and we are graced with the presence of Box Brown, who you may not be familiar with, but after tonight, you will be. He's a writer, cartoonist, artist. Welcome to the show, Box.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Thank you, sir. So I guess to get people more familiar with you, we will start with introducing your books, which you did the one book of Andre the Giant a few years ago, correct?
Yep.
And now we have a brand new one with Andy Kaufman, and which most people would look at the cover, and if you know Andy Kaufman, I mean, most people know him from Taxi and whatnot, but I mean, most fans do know him as a wrestling entertainer as well. And so it seems like a perfect fit for a follow-up for Andre.
It definitely covers a lot of his wrestling career.
Yes, absolutely. It does go into other parts of it, but yeah, I love the wrestling part and the actual history of him being a wrestling fan.
Yeah, I think that you know the two things really complement each other. Like his interest in wrestling really influenced his comedy, and I think that his you know appearance with wrestling in a way influenced wrestling.
Oh, absolutely. We were talking off air and just. Yeah, I mean, he was a heel on stage as much as in the ring sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
So these aren't regular books as far as written books. These are, I mean, it's a medium that I love, and I have not read the Andre book, but as soon as I heard you come out with the Andre, and the Andy Kaufman book, I snatched it up, and I just love it. What inspired you to do this kind? I mean, it's basically a graphic novel, cartoon.
Right. you know, it's the medium that I work in. And, you know, I started doing nonfiction comics like a long time ago as a way to like, it was like me studying things, you know, it was like, I would make the comics, but I would be like teaching myself about things. And, you know, at one point I was working on this really long project, in like 2011 or something like that. And I finished that and I had read something about Andre the Giant, you know, one of the stories recently. And I just started making comics about Andre the Giant. I was watching all these wrestling shoot interviews of all the guys from the 80s and stuff, and all of them had had stories about Andre, and they were like unbelievable, but like they were real, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was the boss, definitely.
It's funny because he called everybody else boss, but
yeah
he was the boss.
He was
right,
the
exactly.
boss. So maybe start off a little bit about did you want to always be a cartoonist? Have you done that all your life as a little kid?
Yeah, I did. I did it a lot growing up, and I was similarly kind of into comics and pro wrestling. But as I got into high school and stuff, I kind of stopped drawing, and then I got back into it later on in my early 20s, and then I started making comics around the same time. Yeah, I don't know. It's like I wish I never quit drawing it. I kind of got out of it when I was in high school because I was all, you know, high school student, all messed up, didn't want to do anything and whatever, slacking off. But I you know, I still read comics though. I used to love the strips called Life in Hell. And it's
that's The Simpsons. I mean, that's...
Matt Groening strip. It was, like, my favorite thing. Because I was, like, such a huge Simpsons fan back then, especially, like, this was in, like, the mid-90s. And The Simpsons were so good. And I was, like, so into that. And so I got really into Life in Hell. And then from there I got into other, like, indie comics and stuff like that. And... got into reading graphic novels and other types of comics like that, Daniel Clowes and that type of stuff. And, and then next thing you know, I was making comics every day and just did it, you know, for a very long time, every day and all the time, as much as I could. And it eventually became a job.
That's awesome. I mean, that's the dream, right? do something you love and get paid for it.
Yeah, I really do. It's really great.
Yeah, we've had a couple of comic book artists on, and they all say the same thing. And like
I mean, you really just gotta. It's weird because you gotta like love hanging out by yourself for like super extended periods of time, you know. But like, if you do like that, then it's definitely great. It's fun. And it's, you know, I still work a lot and everything, but it's just, I always want to be, even when I'm at my leisure, I think I sometimes would be rather at the drawing table, you know?
Sure. Well, you probably feel at home there. Yeah. A little bit. I mean, and sometimes it's probably a nice getaway from the real world stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
What makes you, do you ever, are you mainly black and white, or do you ever use color?
I've been doing black and white for a long time. Actually, I'm working on a book now in color, but I usually use limited color palettes. I did a book a few years ago about the video game Tetris.
I saw that.
Yeah, that has a limited color. It has just a yellow color in it. But yeah, I do mostly black and white and maybe one or two colors. That's usually the way I work.
I say black and white, but it's definitely more than that. I mean, there's definitely gray tones, and I mean to be in black and grays and whites, it's very colorful the way you draw it.
Like a black and white movie.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be full pages where there's just black and then maybe one person, and it just really, really pops.
Yeah.
So, John, you got any questions for Box?
Well, yeah, I wanted him to talk about the inspiration for the title of the book, which I love.
You know, that's how I think that's how people were, the mm-hmm. way they would react to Andy. They'd be like, is yes. this guy for real?
Yeah, exactly.
This guy's for real. You know, the subtitle originally was, and I kind of wish we kept it now, was the, because it's this guy for real, the unbelievable Andy Kaufman, but the original one was, is this guy for real, the unbeatable Andy Kaufman.
Oh, I do like yes. that. That was better. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
We went back and forth with that for a long time.
I bet.
I'm an Andy Kaufman fan from a very young age. I first saw him in 1975 on Saturday Night Live, and I'm 55 years old, so we do the math. But Andy was so versatile too. I mean, we had a little Patreon talk about Andy, you know, to go along with this, and I just barely scratched the surface, but I just remembered again, you know, his Elvis impersonations.
Yeah.
Which were the best. And Elvis's favorite. Elvis actually taped them. Remember he would tape them. You know, I mean, that's got to be the ultimate honor in the whole world.
I know.
You're this fan of this guy, and you do this invitation, and he loves it so much that he's like a fan of you. That's like some meta stuff right there. But
I think that the like the standard Elvis impression is Andy's impression.
Yeah, they all copied him. They really
Andy was the one that really made, you know, everybody that does Elvis says, thank you very much.
Yes.
And that was like the catchphrase Andy used.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's influenced a lot of things. I mean, I believe that he is the match that lit the concept of sports entertainment. We're sitting here, just talked about his influence on Elvis impersonations, his influence on avant-garde comedy is certainly infathomable, you know. So, I mean, I'm always anxious to see more material, and certainly as a comic book fan, I really like that, you know, the idea of doing this comic version of his life. I think it's a great thing that you did.
Oh, thank you very much. It's amazing to me. That I can't help but ever thinking about if we didn't lose Andy in 84, because I really think he would have been involved in WrestleMania after that. But you know, because, you know, Andy was in wrestling and they never had celebrities and everything. And then right afterwards, they have WrestleMania and it's Cyndi Lauper.
Well, I There's no question in my mind that Vince saw that. There's no way he missed it. I mean, it was a national event when, you know, Jerry Lawler slapped Andy on the David Letterman show. Yeah. Everybody saw it. Everybody knew about it. It was in all the papers. It was on all the news. So there's no question that, you know, and I'm not saying that Vince probably had already some of these ideas in his head, but that was the impetus. Sure. The impetus for him to see that, okay, this can work.
This can work, yeah.
And he put all in and paid off on it. And I also think that's unfortunately the reason why he doesn't put Andy into the Celebrity Hall of Fame, because it's not his. And it's an unfortunate situation because there's no celebrity that deserves it more than Andy, more in than my him. Opinion. Yeah, Andy, no way.
Cyndi Lauper, I think, should be in there too, and she's been in there.
Oh, yes, no question. Yeah. I can't. That's even more unbelievable.
She's not in there? Wow.
No.
That's
shocking. I can see the Jerry thing because of the jealousy and the kind of thing that sometimes Vince doesn't want to acknowledge other things that he had nothing to do with. But Cyndi was his. Cyndi was there.
Yeah.
WWF.
They put Wendy Richter in, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It might be something where they offered it to her and she turned it down, too. True. You know, who knows?
I mean, I think I know Cyndi Lauper because of WrestleMania. I think that was the first time I saw her. So it's kind of crazy.
No, I admit, I know her from the first video, Girls Want or just Captain Lou was in
Captain
that.
Captain Lou is There's the... she did
and
the
that whole Goonies generation.
Yeah, there's the extended Goonies video that has, Andre's in it.
That's right. That's greatness.
I'm actually curious about something, is how you approached this. A lot of times you're kind of doing a bio on somebody and it's a little easier to get a handle on them. And with Andy Kaufman, from all accounts, the personal behind the scenes Andy Kaufman was quiet, polite, professional, intelligent. Then the persona, and particularly in the wrestling, but even in some of his stand-up, was this heel, essentially challenging people to hate him and building that up and antagonizing his audience to the point that they're like screaming, yelling, and booing at him while he's doing a performance, until he suddenly switches and does something else and the tension gets. That's such a broad contrast. How did you
a contrast even more. For example, that at the Madison Square Garden show, he took everybody out for ice cream afterwards. The entire audience.
You know. Yep. How did you approach that to figure out how to best execute it?
I wanted to make sure that the idea of him as a regular person came across, because I think in other depictions sometimes it's like, there's no depiction of that regular person. There's just like this maniac that's just like constantly on, and it's never off, and it's, you know, didn't have any kind of regular life. But that's not true, really. You know, like, he had friendships and he had, you know, personal relationships with people where he was just like his normal self and all that.
He showed that sometimes, like the famous incident where he called his grandmother on David Letterman.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Which is amazing.
Yeah.
I wanted to, make sure. I thought about this with the Andre book too. Is that, you know, these people have like these loom larger than life, you know, but really they're just like the regular people. You know, it's we're all human and we all have these ups and downs, and we all have these, even though we have these larger than life personas.
Absolutely.
There's like a real person behind all that.
And especially somebody like Andre, where, you know, he can't be anywhere and not be noticed. He can't be anywhere, not anybody not know who he is. As a matter of fact, you know, one of my favorite images, which they show a lot in this trailer for the upcoming Andre documentary, one of my favorite images of him is him riding that three-wheeler with that big grin on his face.
Yeah, yeah.
Out on his ranch. You can see that he's just away from everybody, and he's just having fun and enjoying life. And I'm so glad that he had that outlet.
It was like a refuge away from the world.
Indeed.
And yeah, everything was his size there and everything.
Yeah,
like that,
exactly.
He really loved that the ranch. It was for sale a few years ago. I was like, maybe I should just buy it. It wasn't that much money. I mean, it wasn't crazy. It wasn't like millions of dollars or anything.
That would have made you the ultimate collector.
Yeah, yeah.
replica belts?
Yeah, you got it.
Well, Bucks, it's been great talking with you. You want to promote anything? Do you go to conventions or anything? Or
actually, I have a few coming up. I will be at C2E2 in Chicago.
Oh, nice.
Actually, the same weekend as WrestleMania.
Oh.
And then the following weekend, I'll be at Dink in Denver, Colorado. You can find me on the web. At foxbrown.com and at foxbrown on Twitter and Instagram.
Awesome.
And let me say something real quick, please. For anybody out there listening, I have the Andre book. I got it quite some time ago, and my wife is not as big a wrestling fan as I am by any stretch of the imagination, but she's always had an interest in some of the larger characters, larger than life characters like Andre. And her is not a wrestling fan. She was interested when I got it. I mean, let me see that when you're done. And even for someone who's not a wrestling fan, she thoroughly enjoyed the book. So it's I would, for any of you listening that are wrestling fans, because you're listening to a wrestling podcast, I would recommend this book as well to friends of yours who are just interested in this type of storytelling that aren't wrestling fans. Because if we go by my wife, they'll enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, especially the Andy Kaufman one.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get the Andre book. One last question before we get off of here with you, Box. Do you watch wrestling now? Do you watch the current?
I'm following it. I haven't watched every second of Raw in the last couple of months, but
it's very hard to.
Yeah,
I mean,
Raw's been better lately.
Well, but not only. I mean, I don't say that as a negative. I just say 3 hours is a ton.
Well, okay.
That's
long.
I heard a rumor they might be going, moving to Fox or something, and maybe
Fox. There is a possible deal going on with Fox,
and that might involve the moving back to 2 hours.
Yeah, Fox would want it to be 2 hours. The only people that want 3 hours is USA.
USA. Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Vince doesn't want it. Nobody else wants it. It's just USA.
It's very hard to have a 3 hour show of anything.
Yeah, it's really hard to fill up all that time.
Yeah. Well, I'm very sorry that Jonathan couldn't be with us, but we thank him for contacting you.
Who is your current favorite wrestler?
Oh yeah,
that's currently wrestling.
Yeah.
It's hard to say. I mean, you know, of course I love Young Bucks and all that.
Oh, yeah.
Too
sweet.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're the best for me. I mean, but, you know, I like a lot of the roster in WWE, to be honest. I mean, I think everybody's kind of great. Yeah,
it's got a fantastic roster.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the best. Yeah. All right, Box. Well, thank you for coming on, and we really enjoyed talking with you.
All right. Yes. Thanks, guys. Take it easy.
Good night. You too.
Good night.
Vince McMahon has brought you such exciting ventures like his own bodybuilding federation, his own football organization, and even his very own network. Well, get ready as he brings to you his attempt to help the children with former WWE superstars. That's right, the VKM After School Program will bring your children educational and fun activities such as bird watching with Coco Beware, reading time with George the Animal Steel, pin the name on Ed Leslie, fun with farm animals with Terry Taylor, tennis lessons with Jim Cornette, woodworking with Hacksaw Jim Duggan, math and English tutoring with Sid Vicious and Scott Steiner, poetry corner with Leaping Lanny Poffo, and arts and crafts with the Bushwhackers. Be sure to enroll soon before classes get all booked up.
Hey, cats and kittens, it's time again for the Pro Wrestling Roundtable. And we found that we've decided it's time that we need to discuss the general wrestling scene and see what's going on. And we're going into the biggest weekend of wrestling the WrestleMania weekend. We'll be talking about WrestleMania itself, you know, in the next show. But right now, we just need to see the lay of the land, and certainly some hot topics that are popping up and I've been wanting to discuss, So to do that, well, unfortunately, we only have myself, your host, John Logan Neal, our producer, Richard Yule, as usual, and our regular, irregular, Jerry Chandler. But unfortunately, our third head of the Dragon, Jonathan Williams. I kept wanting to say Coachman.
Why not? He called Bo Dallas Rhino.
That is the most ridiculous mistake. It's one thing. How in the world do you mix up Bo Dallas and Rhino? But anyway, my apologies to Jonathan Williams because I skipped in your name, and then two, it was because Coachman was stuck in my head. But you're not like him at all. So anyway, Jonathan can't be with us tonight because he's busy doing that movie work. And that's talking. I guess the first thing we need to do is address the elephant boy in the room.
I have to say one thing first.
Yeah.
I've met John in real life. I think Coach has better hair. John is going to send me such a nasty message on Facebook.
So anyway, let's address the elephant boy in the room, which I know that Richard won't get, and most of you out there won't get, but it's clever as hell, I promise you. Because Moolah, which began as a valet, was for the elephant boy, the wrestler. So, see, it all ties together.
It always does.
It always does. So, okay, yes, let's start with that. Start with the hottest iron.
Get that out of the way.
I thought John was going to say she was like Cher, and she's predominantly known by one name now.
Well, there is that.
So when you posted this, John, on our Facebook group, which is world famous, I figure, Pro Wrestling Roundtable on Facebook, look us up. When you
if
posted
you're not
this,
there, you're square.
So on Raw, they promoted a Fabulous Moolah Battle Royal at WrestleMania.
Yes, they added another Battle Royal for the women to go along with the Andre the Giant Memorial.
Yeah. I think it's a cool thing. I mean, it's good. I mean, WrestleMania is like 7 hours. You might as well put
it gives all
on the
women
show.
Who don't have anything else to do a paycheck. You know, so good. Yeah. Yeah, that's all fine. Yeah.
I had no idea of the controversy that was amongst this that you had kind of preceded. I mean, the post you put was really before anything actually happened.
Entirely, because the reason is because
the outrage had started, but yes. The actual outcome had not happened.
Oh, no. True.
I
had a hot scoop, man. Put that hot news up there.
This is coming from probably I would think that most wrestling fans, I mean, even as hardcore as I think I am, I had absolutely no idea. I mean, I know the legends that Moolah. I do understand the legends or stories or whatever you want to call them about Moolah and whatever. But I guess wrestling has desensitized me so much. And if you don't know what we're talking about, there's all sorts of, there's all sorts of people that was not a fan of the Moolah having.
Let me throw it real fast because I can get the details real fast and easy. For a very long time, as Moolah was running her training camp and was setting up other female wrestlers to be wrestlers, for various territories and promoters. She had set up a training camp where she charged a large amount. She also charged rent and food for the people that stayed there. These wrestlers would get in debt with her. So basically, for a lot of these ladies' careers, Moolah would take 30% off the top. And sometimes the accusation was she would sometimes set them up to get into debt to her.
Yeah,
and would use
wage
them.
Slaves.
Yeah, so that they would essentially be, for their entire career, she got 30% off the top before they got paid. There were accusations that she would send some of them out to promoters to do photo shoots that were little more than escort service work. She was also a kind of proprietorial about who was going to be allowed to be a star in any operation that she was in, and that she would kind of destroy careers if she decided that you weren't doing what she said. So there was a lot
are you
of
talking
people,
about Vince or Moolah.
Yes,
that's
yes,
right.
We are. Which is birds of a feather, but
she was Vince long before Vince.
Yeah. Well, she was, and it's one of the things when we'll touch more on it, I'm sure, but it's one of the things when I had said in the discussion in there, the reality is there's a lot of people in professional wrestling in general. When you talk about that, and they're singling out Moolah. I can understand maybe somebody saying, okay, look, you have to discuss the reality behind the curtain. But she was a product of the wrestling business. And as much as a lot of us talk about, particularly, old farts like me and John and a few others, talk about all the glory years of wrestling and back in the days of the territories, and you hear wrestlers talk about all these great, glorious – when you actually listen to what they're talking about, Moolah was absolutely 110% a product of professional wrestling of that era.
Oh, absolutely.
She was – I mean that's what promoters would do. And people kind of glaze over it when they're talking about other things. But like Vern Gagne lost out on having Hulk Hogan when Hulk Hogan was blowing up huge and doing movies with Stallone because Vern was like, oh, you've done all this work and you're selling T-shirts and this other stuff. Well, fine, you give me whatever it was, like this stupid number, like 80 or 90%, and you get the rest. And Hogan told him to screw himself because he was now in a position to do that. But just like what Moolah did with these girls, you had promoters all the time. It's like, oh, okay, you've done the work, but you're working for me. You have to give me this.
And there really, really wasn't anywhere else to work.
Yeah, and there wasn't anything to do. And because of what wrestling was practically, in a way, it was a very public entity, but it was a secret society.
Oh, yeah.
These women might have even felt at the time what was being done to them was wrong, just as some of these wrestlers may have felt things were wrong. And you see some of them now, and even kind of bits and pieces of it came out, little comments here and there in the Legends of Wrestling Roundtable that they did for the – earliest version of the network, when they're talking about what just dirty bastards some of the promoters.
It was always the boys versus the office.
Yeah.
But always.
But the thing was, you couldn't do anything about it because if you had been one of those women, or you
could move, you could move to another territory. The men had that advantage. The women did not.
The women did. You couldn't do what everybody thinks you would do. Oh, well, report it or sue or something like that, because you couldn't do that because that exposes the business. You'll never work again, and you think you're going to destroy the business, and you want to get out of this to succeed in the business, but you think you're going to destroy the business if you do this, and everybody's telling you you can't. It's not just Moolah. It's the entire – the reality is – a lot of the business was like that, and a lot of people were like that. And it's,
one of the first people that really brought some of that to light just by his actions, he never broke kayfabe or anything, was Bruiser Brody, who had gotten to the point where he could get over no matter where he went, so he didn't feel like he needed, to kowtow to the offices, so he wouldn't play ball a lot of times. He wouldn't cooperate. So he got a bad reputation among the, wrestling scene because he wasn't, playing ball with mostly promoters. But yeah, go ahead.
No, but no. I mean, that was it. It was just, you know, you've got that was the world of professional wrestling in the era that a lot of these charges and accusations come from. And I'm not saying it's right, and to some degree, I'm not saying it's excusable that you take advantage of people because, well, that's, you know, that's what the workplace around here is like, so everybody does it. But it's something akin to what, I can't remember if it was Richard said this, but I know like several other people also said it, was kind of, it's almost like there's almost a matter of selective outrage.
Absolutely.
You know, they're going after Moolah, they're going after Warrior, they're going after occasionally, you know, other people here and there. And it's like, but the reality is, most, when you sit back and you listen to the stories, some of these guys are talking about with a big smile on their face, and you're just kind of going, you know, oh, that's really funny. But then you think about it, man, if somebody did that in my workplace, I'd probably punch the crap out of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I brought this up on the Facebook group with Ric Flair. Like, I mean, nobody talks bad about him. And it even, and I know John said he's.
Oh, that's not true. There's a lot of people that are anti-Flair.
Yeah, but for the most part,
yes.
I mean, if they made a Ric Flair match, it would not be canceled 2 days later.
It depends. See, then that's my point. And I'm, see, one thing I want to make
so
clear.
So if they made a Moolah match, if they made a Moolah Battle Royal and it was for men, would it be different? If they said we're gonna do the Andre the Giant Battle Royal for men and a Moolah Battle Royal for men as well, would people still have a problem? Because that's what you're saying. That's what you're saying.
Women's match. Okay, so here, let me get my point across. Because look, I'm on the same side here. I'm a Moolah fan. I think Moolah's the perfect choice in the microcosm of professional wrestling. It makes perfect sense. But wrestling is no longer in that microcosm, especially WWE. WWE is a publicly traded company. It is on par with the NFL and other sports leagues. It's being popular. It's on television. You know, huge ratings and so on and so forth. So here's the thing. The reason that both Warrior and the selectiveness exists, particularly with the Warrior and Moolah, is because of the kind of people they are and the awards there or the honors that are under their name. There's people who just think it's incredibly hypocritical for the Warrior Award to be named after the Warrior because of the kind of person that he was in the last few years of his life. And there's a lot of people who think it's hypocritical to have a former wrestler and promoter who was really bad to women be the symbol of women wrestling at the WrestleMania. And I said as an example on the world famous Facebook of the Pro Wrestling Roundtable that if somebody were to try to make Ric Flair the symbol or the honoree of a award for great fathers, then absolutely, that's hypocritical, and I think there's a lot of people, Dave Meltzer and others, who do love the man that would call that out. I would. As much as I love Rick, I would say, well, that doesn't make a damn lick of sense, because he's not a great father. You know, he's not demonstrably bad father for most of his life, or, you know, for sobriety, or anything like that. It's not these particular people in general. It's because of the association of the particular thing that WWE hooked them up with that some of these people in the wrestling community have an issue with. They don't have necessarily an issue with the people. They have an issue with what that, it doesn't click. It doesn't fit.
Well, I mean, I'm not necessarily saying these people were wrong, but I am, but I'm not supporting Moolah in that respect. But wrestling has desensitized me enough to understand that wrestling was always a dirty business. It's not as much now, but I mean, up until 2000, it was a very dirty business.
Yes.
I mean, and
Even past 2000, just not on the larger stage.
True. I mean, it definitely calmed down after 2000. I mean, once 2005 hit, I mean, Vince's, you know, but it. I mean, the man who is behind it all is the worst of them all. I mean, well, he really is. I mean, there was lawsuits about it. I mean, it's just, I mean,
well, not even just that. There's the whole Ring Boy Gate thing, you know, that happened under his watch, you know, with Pat Patterson and Terry Darwin and all that and the other.
Yep.
You had the steroids case and so forth. Yep. You know, and so, yeah, there's no question that Vince has got a lot of, but the problem is that only in one case has it ever come to any kind of legal situation.
And
I mean, hell, there's some people, including myself, that believe that Vince McMahon paid off the cops in the Jimmy Snuka case.
No, because there is
witnesses that say that he came in with a briefcase and did not leave that briefcase.
I mean,
so you can make your own suppositions, but that's all it is, supposition.
Yeah, I won't even go into the realm of conspiracy or possible conspiracy or anything, but just on the basics of just talking about Vince McMahon. And it's one of the things that wrestlers have tried to undo. And yes, WWE has made steps in the last 15 or so years to do things like set up rehabs that they'll pay for at least the first time or do other things. But the reality is, as far back as the early 80s, and it's one of the things Jesse Ventura gets talked about when it comes up, way back when, wanting to either unionize or change how wrestlers were treated, because this was a business and particularly under Vince, but under Vince, where you work for me, you're an employee of the WWF, except I'm not going to call you an employee, you're an independent contractor. But unlike independent contractors everywhere else, you're not allowed to go do a side deal.
Hey, yeah, there's
I'm going to call you an independent contractor so that I don't have to give you insurance, health insurance. I don't have to cover this. I don't have to do that. I don't have to pay for this. And it was like basically before, you had one or two people, maybe out of 100 wrestlers on average, they'd become huge. They'd become a Ric Flair or a Hulk Hogan, a Roddy Piper, or somebody like that. And they'd suddenly start, really earning money and maybe they wouldn't burn through it. But the reality is over the years, and it's something I don't like to look at because it breaks my heart sometimes, but you see these things of wrestlers who were the biggest thing in the world in the 70s and the 80s, and now they're broken down. They look 15 years older than they really are, and they're living not in poverty, but they're definitely not living well because most of their money went to some of it was their fault because the money went to the lifestyle, but some of the money, they only got paid so much. They got screwed by promoters. They had to cover their own medical, and they had to cover their own medical for years. Unless they set something up, there was nothing like, my job has a retirement and a supplemental 401k and things like that. There was nothing like that set up for them unless, they did it themselves. And some of them throughout their careers, they didn't have the money to set it up for themselves.
Yeah.
So
it's a crooked business, and it remains a crooked business. And that they'll there's a lot of people that have challenged that it's illegal or unconstitutional the way that the work for hire thing works with the wrestlers and so on and so forth. And it's even made more so because all these corporate people and even incidental people and the TV network or the TV crew and all this and the other, they have guaranteed contracts and they've got insurance and they're actually on the corporate payroll, and it's just it is ridiculous. But that's again the way wrestling has always been. And yes, it is true that if you peel back Vince McMahon's veneer, you're going to see worms and it's going to be not good. We know that, but that's true of almost everybody, including beloved people like Dusty Rhodes, who as a promoter and definitely screwed people over, definitely, did some things that weren't the nicest thing in the world, the Rock and Roll Express certainly have their statements about that. That he screwed them over, and here they're one of a perfect example of what Jerry was talking about of old style guys that were on top of the world at one time that basically eke a living on the indie scene now and look terrible. You know? Well,
and Dusty's got a tag team tournament named after him, so there's the irony.
There is the irony there, but that's true.
Yeah,
but the NXT isn't as big a deal as the WWE. Yeah. It's not as prominent.
But I mean, they have particularly once they became a more corporate, things have been changing in wrestling in general in the last 15 years, in particular, particularly after Guerrero and Benoit, and particularly. And so many other things that happened.
That's when it truly changed. Yeah, Benoit was when it really went.
Plus some things from other sports having an impact on sports entertainment, like how much is becoming more known about concussion because of the NFL studies. You know, all this stuff comes into play, and they start working to better protect the employees and all. But you know, I love wrestling, and there was a lot of things I didn't know about wrestling when I grew up as a fan in the late 70s, in the 80s, in the 90s. And you know, when you really start getting into wrestling, you become like that much of a geek for it. Wrestling, like you've said, wrestling has always been dirty. Wrestling is like you just peel back one layer, and suddenly there's all of these things that you're almost like, I almost wish I didn't know this.
Yeah.
But at least, you know, it kind of taints some of the memories. And at
Why
least
do you think I
like
love kayfabe so much?
Yeah. But then that comes into the problem. And one of the things that we started talking about on the Pro Wrestling Roundtable Facebook post about this was, Universal Famous, because it's a universal title. There you go. At what point do we say, okay, we have a character. You know, we have a character, the Fabulous Moolah. The character of the Fabulous Moolah, or the character of the Ultimate Warrior, or the character of Ric Flair achieved X, Y, and Z. The character of Hulk Hogan achieved X, Y, and Z, and had such a huge following. We're doing something that gives a nod to the character, because, you know, no matter what you can say about her personally, Moolah was one of the two biggest wrestlers of her era, female wrestlers, at any given time for a lot of her career. And she was probably one of the most well-known faces in women's wrestling at certain points of her career.
I mean, hell, even in the Attitude Era. I mean,
her and Mae Young.
Oh yeah,
but I mean, at what point do you go, okay, look, we're not here's the complicated thing with it, guys and gals. We're, you know, wrestling is a bit like a movie. It's just a live action, live performance movie, and some of our guys are actually using their real names, and some of them aren't, but they're playing characters. You know, it's like, this guy is not really this, you know, hot-headed, crazy, whatever. And, you know, in real life, he's much more calmed down and even though he's probably using the same name he's going to use when he's out and about and when you see him. They're characters. There are a lot of actors who are really horrible people, but people love the characters they played. And people hold up the characters. And even taking away from care, I'll take it away from wrestling for a minute. There's a writer who I love. I idolize his ability to do things with words. And for years I've heard all sorts of stories which are kind of funny, but as you get older and you realize I occasionally have to work with or deal with people that do this kind of thing, he's a wonderful person to his friends. He's an amazing talent, and I will always love his work. But I will kind of give the caveat that, you know what? There are times that I won't quite rate Harlan Ellison as a really great person.
He's my favorite writer too. So.
Oh yeah. And I'm someone, I love his works. I have his books. I have the documentary. Yeah. I have, I've gotten to know people who are actually friends with Harlan, and they talk about him as the more quiet Harlan. But, you know, this is also the same guy that, you know, he got up on a table and attacked an executive who was saying stupid stuff, or mailed a dead gopher to an editor. Slow mail in the summer Yes. And it arrived on a Friday and spent the entire weekend in an office, so they had to fumigate it. Yes. Now, I'm never going to say, hey, you know what? We need to name a humanitarian award after Harlan Ellison. But if you sat there and said, you know what? We want to do this award for speculative fiction, and we're going to call it the Harlan. I will fight anybody that says we shouldn't. Because to me, he's one of the greatest living writers.
I think it comes down to this, in that the fact that it is named after the fabulous Moolah is part of the work. If it had been named, you know, Lillian Ellison, then, you know, maybe that's another whole kettle of fish.
Are you recognizing the art or the artist?
Right. So anyway, we've already spent about 25 minutes on that.
I knew it would be like that.
So I guess we'll move on. I'll let somebody else choose a subject, and we'll go from there. So what do y'all want to talk about?
Just say no, Undertaker. Just say no.
I should have known that was going to happen. Me and Jerry's already had this exchange.
Well, here's the rest of the show.
No, I can say it in the shortest possible way. I love The Undertaker. I've always been a fan of The Undertaker. I think he is one of the greatest performers of his generation. The Undertaker has passed 50 years of age. He's had multiple surgeries, and he has had a career that has done a huge amount of damage to his body. You know, there were a lot of people that were unhappy that he went out on his shield at WrestleMania last year, and that was the last that we'll see of him as an in-ring performer. But for me, the reality is he did a good job with that match. And after that match, all of us thinking that we were seeing the end, watching him put his gloves down, watching him put the coat down, watching him put the hat down, leaving the ring the way he did, embracing his wife, breaking character like he had never done, walking up the ramp, holding the one hand up, saluting and disappearing. That is a memory that they will have, a moment that they will have so much work to do if they want to try to top that. And I know that there were rumors that said, you know, what he wanted to do for his choice was he wanted to wrestle Cena for his final match. And I can understand maybe somebody saying, yeah, maybe we should do that. But I don't know that they can – I don't know that he's not going to be the Taker that we know and love. He's older. He's been through the surgeries now, and he's been a year out. I don't care how much he's worked out or tried to stay in shape. He's a year out, and he's a year older. And I don't know that they can replicate – the moment that we got last year. It'll seem like a lesser send-off.
I don't think they'll try. I think what could possibly happen is what John had stated, he'll be the American Badass. And I think that's the only way. Yeah, but it is a little different. I think it's separated in my head.
Yeah.
Look, if he comes at the Limp Bizkit, I do not think of The Undertaker at all. But I mean, it's sort of true.
Almost
I mean,
a different like, gimmick, you know.
Yeah, and so whereas I mean, obviously, I don't want to see the same thing as far as American Badass, you know, doing the same version of that. But let's put it this way: I'm not looking forward to if they do it, and they wouldn't have mentioned it if they weren't going to do it. There's no way they would have meant they wouldn't have brought this up if it wasn't going to happen, right?
Yeah, it's
happening. So it's going to happen. Yeah. I mean,
Meltzer's been saying it for months. He's been steadfast that it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, do I want to see it? No, because I did not.
Real funny point, real quick. Though he actually, because of John Cena's being so damn good and so on point, he then started doubting. And he actually wrote one of his insider guys in WWE and says, "Is it off?" That's how good John Cena can be.
I mean, I don't necessarily want to see the match because I mean I do think Undertaker is not the same person. But I mean, you know, it's WrestleMania, it's Undertaker. It's very hard to I mean, it's very hard to see a WrestleMania without him. I mean, I still wish we would have got a Sting and Undertaker match. That will always make me mad that we never got that. And it's all Seth Rollins' fault. And so I don't know. I mean, it is what it is. It's going to happen. John Cena did a great job on the promo the other night.
Your opinion.
Well, I watched the first hour of Raw because I couldn't stand it after that. And his promo really kind of got me off guard. Like, I didn't expect him to say that. Like, I knew he was going somewhere. I just, you know, sometimes when I watch stuff, I don't think, and for sometimes the better of myself, because then I'm surprised. And, you know, it was a nice surprise, and how he did it was a little different. You know, it wasn't your normal call.
What I liked about it is that he turned on a dime. I mean, the whole first part of it was, hey, I'm not going to go. I'm going to go as a fan. Let's go out here and drink a beer with the other fan, and that's all. Have fun, so on and so forth. And then he gets back in the ring, and then whoop, his comes out freaking with, like, you know, claws after the Undertaker.
Yeah.
Well, so, I could have gone for that. But like I said in the piece that I wrote the other day, the only thing that got me about it was immediately my brain kind of went, what the hell did he just say? With like the logic of it, because it's like, here's a guy who spent weeks now failing to earn his spot at WrestleMania. And rather than accept, hey, you know, this year might not be my mania, I should just, you know, let the other guys have the mania. I realize I'm not making it character-wise. You know, I failed to get in. I tried this. I tried that. I'm not going to have it. Here's a guy who's like suddenly coming out and going, you retired guy, you better fight. It was you that wouldn't face me. You'd better come back and face me or else you're an egomaniac. And it's like, wait a minute. You're the guy who couldn't earn a spot. So you're now trying to call out the retired wrestler and tell him, give me a spot on WrestleMania or else you're the egomaniac.
Exactly.
And I'm like, what?
I don't see what's wrong with that. I mean, that's a good promo because, yes, he's being a hypocrite. He's being an egomaniac. That's fine.
I guess maybe as they progress more and I see what they're going to do with it, if they're going to, you know, have Cena be a little more heelish,
it
might work more for me. But at the time I saw it, I was just like, Did I miss a sentence?
Well, like I said, he did turn on the dime. My take on it is this. I love The Undertaker. But he is certainly past his prime. Some of the stuff from last year was very hard to watch. So, I mean, if I had my druthers, I love that ending from the last WrestleMania. I love the idea of him going out like that. And I'm happy for that to be the end of The Undertaker. On the other hand, John Cena is a consummate professional. He's one of the best in the world. There's no question to this. He's proven it time and time again. I can't think of the last time that John Cena's actually had a bad match. He's had some that are not as good as others, but he usually puts on a damn good match. I could see him, a Taker, going all out, having an okay match. Is it going to be great? No. Is it going to be Shawn Michaels in him? No. Is it going to be Triple H in him? No. But this is WrestleMania. We're already going to get our four-star matches. You know, we know where those are going to be. We know that
AJ
and Nakamura are going to knock it out of the park. We know that's going to be the case. We also need your stunt matches. You need your Andre and Hogan, you know, along with the Savage and Steamboat. And that could be this, because people loved Undertaker. They love John Cena. Well, at least half of them do. And so it will be a big deal, especially how they build it. You know, it will be a big deal anyway, but better how they build it. So if it's got to happen, this is the best way for it to happen.
They definitely need to build it better, because I think one of the things that could help get the match over and help me get over some reservations is, you know, the WrestleMania crowd, depending on how into it they are and they stay. One of the things I've seen people say, and I don't entirely agree with the level of their criticism, but people will talk about The Rock versus Hogan and say, well, if you watch the match, it's amazing. Now, if you watch the match with the sound off, it's just a really kind of so-so match.
Sure.
And I don't actually quite buy that. It's not because I've actually had to watch it almost muted before because of stuff in the background, or kids trying to go to sleep or stuff like. It's a good match even without the sound. But man, when you have that crowd that's just ravenously all into it, it's something else entirely.
Of course it is. And I believe they will be.
If they get into it, yeah, it will help make that match more than it could be.
I believe they will be, because this is an Undertaker versus John Cena, two of the biggest names in WrestleMania history. It's a marquee dream match. But
Sting is special referee.
They cannot go too long.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it should be a 15-minute match.
Maybe not even that. You know, but
I think it could be a 15-minute match.
It can. A 15 will be okay, but just depending on where they're at, it might even be to be a little short. 12 minutes maybe, but certainly no more than 15. And you know, keep the crowd in hot, you know, have a good finish and so on and so forth, and then you're good. And one thing, it's not going to be the last match like the last one was anyway. So there's that too. So, time for you to pick one, Richard. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I'm not going to choose WWE since we've talked about them for a little bit. I'm actually going to pick something that isn't going to happen for a while, but is very important on WrestleMania weekend because of Ring of Honor Supercard. All In is what I'm excited about, and I am going to try everything to go to this. It's in Chicago.
That might be the case. You only be able to see it because I still there's no word about, you know, if they're going to record it or how they're going to distribute it or anything.
I don't care. I mean, even if it was going to be on the WWE Network, I still want to go. This is something.
Oh no! I get that. Yeah.
Yeah, this is just something that I've been going to indie shows for over a year now, and there's just something about the fans. Like they're nothing like WWE fans. It's so different. My wrestling has streamers. I still want to make that T-shirt because I just think streamers are great. It's a cool effect. It's fun to throw them. I mean, like, it's just all together amazing. But All In, it's going to be in Chicago.
See, I was far more into Bloodstained Canvas, but that's okay.
Well, you know.
Well, I come from another era.
You monster.
That dirty, horrible era that we were just talking about earlier.
But, you know, we really don't have much information. I do know they have a venue. I think it's, gosh, I had it. It's the, I don't
Sears.
Know. Sears something. Yes. So,
Sears Dinner or something like that.
So it does have a venue. It does have an official hotel that I could not get a hotel at, a room at, when I tried. So I don't know that it's sold out.
Welcome to my annual Dragon Con experience.
Well, luckily, I mean, I don't really care about staying at that hotel if I don't have to. I mean, literally, if I go, I'm probably flying in on Saturday and leaving Sunday morning. So it will literally be a one day thing for me. But that's yet to happen, so we'll see what happens. But, I mean, obviously no card has been set, but, you know, the main people that are going to be there are Kenny Omega, who is one of my favorites. And I just watched his match with Jay White. It was on the last episode of New Japan Pro Wrestling on Access TV, and it was the entire hour was devoted to that match, and I love it. I mean, it's what I want. I want an hour show. I want maybe three matches, and that's it. I mean, that's just what I think is a perfect wrestling show.
Look in my eyes, what do you see? The personality.
Well, you know, yeah, so right. That is the other thing about this is, you know, they have stated that they want 10,000 people. That is the goal, and nobody thinks it's going to happen. Their Twitter page, and I understand it's just a Twitter page, already has 15,000, but if they book CM Punk, it will be huge.
They'll get it.
They will easily. I think they're going to get it anyway. I really think they're going to get it.
I will say this is a very important moment in wrestling history.
Huge.
If they need to succeed here, because it takes more power away from the WWE being the only dominant force out there, they could show that, you know, the indie scene and the stars there are big enough and strong enough that they can book and draw this kind of crowd. And but yeah, I truly believe that CM Punk will be there in some capacity or another.
Yes, I'm kind of thinking the same thing, which would be amazing. But the only thing they've really announced, as far as I know, is that Stephen Amell is going to be there.
Right.
So that's
it ain't going to be just three matches.
Oh no, certainly not. No, I mean it's going to be a 4 or 5 hour show probably. Right. It's going to be huge. I mean it, and it is going to probably tell the story of what we're getting right now with Cody versus Omega, and then the Young Bucks versus Omega. I mean we're going to get something huge out of this.
Oh yeah, it's going to be the culmination of this entire war and implosion of the Bullet Club.
I just think Cody is.
Am I thinking of a different All In that they've got set for? There's only one All there because I thought they'd already locked in like Cody and Kenny Omega.
Well, yeah, it is done by them. I mean, it is. I mean, All In is pretty much
Young
the
Bucks,
elites.
Cody.
It is the elite
Young Bucks
show.
The Bullet Club.
Yeah. So, I mean.
Was it Dalton Castle and Marty Scurll?
Yeah, Marty Scurll and yeah. But no, the ones that are actually paying for it is
Cody
and
the
Young
Bucks.
Bucks.
Yeah. Cody is probably my favorite heel right now. I just love his look with the blonde hair now. He looks like some 80s
villain.
Gee, I
wonder where he got that from.
I know, right?
But there was a photo on Facebook or Twitter today that was like things are heating up with the storyline, and it's like Cody standing in the ring like kissing I think Kenny Omega or somebody, and I'm like, okay, so he's going full Gold Dust at this point.
Yeah, they've done some. I watch the Being the Elite YouTube show, and I mean, obviously, I'm a Kenny Omega fan. I've always said that on this program, and I never really was a Cody Rhodes fan in WWE. Stardust, I dug, but I didn't really latch on to anything. The mustache thing, and I liked him when he had the face mask. I liked him a lot right then. I mean, he was still a good heel.
I liked the undashing, and I liked the dashing Cody Rhodes both. Those were probably my favorite runs with him over.
But I think what he's done on his own.
What he's doing
really...
now, where he is channeling his father, but through his other prism to be in his own thing, is brilliant. It's just brilliant. The American Nightmare concept is brilliant.
It's amazing. It's never been. I mean, that name's never really been used, as far as I know. It's kind of amazing. So we'll see.
I'm surprised it took him as long as he did to bleach his hair, like his dad's. I'd
say he fought it. I mean, you know, for whatever purpose.
I haven't thought about it because he's a very complicated and very smart guy. I read this great interview with him just not too long ago, just a few weeks ago, a couple weeks ago, and they talked about his leaving WWE and what led to that and the aftermath of his dad's death and leading into his dad's death and then the initial stuff on the indie circuit and so on and so forth. And he considers things very deeply. But he never wanted to be just a copy of his dad, but the same token, he wants to honor his dad. And so he's come up with the perfect compromise, you know, I think.
Yeah, I mean, whatever anybody thinks about him, I mean, I still think this event is great, and I think, like John, it could change everything, and I just think it's very important. And I wish, I mean, honestly, if I had to pick either to go to WrestleMania or Ring of Honor Supercard, if somebody said I could only go to one of those this year, I'd pick the Ring of Honor Supercard. I think Cody and Kenny is one of the biggest matches of the year.
Yeah, it's For a long while after he left WWE, I think I said it a couple of times on the show. He put up on his social media, you know, these things that the ideas he was pitching to them, that he, you know, what the things he wanted to do and these ideas he wanted to explore, that just kept getting like shot down. And for a while I was kind of like, you know, that's, you know, seeing what he's doing now that he's out and about, it's a damn shame they wouldn't let him do it, because he'd have such a big stage to do it on at the WWE, and he'd have like the opportunity of some of these other guys who are more seasoned. But at this point, going back to what you both said just a few minutes ago, I'm now more than ever as big of a fan of him, maybe not the characters they stuck him with, but him that I was. I'm glad he ran into that wall and finally walked away, because he's getting to do stuff that they never would have let him do, and it's making such a huge wave in the wrestling community. People are looking at it, and people are seeing it, and people are getting interested in it. And I've seen other people, not just, you know, internet wrestling community or the people that get slagged on as the smarks and all. I've seen like casual wrestling fans who've started noticing this and going, well, I want to see that. I mean, okay, the WWE stuff is good, but I want to see that. I want to know what's going on over there, because that looks interesting. Mm-hmm. Or I saw this match on, somebody showed me this match on YouTube, and that was off the hook, man. That was, what was that?
Well, the YouTube is a major conduit of this. And the Young Bucks are the ones that I think that are the ones that have utilized that to the great degree and have really opened up indie wrestling in a way that it never has been before. Because young people can access it just as easily and even easier, really, than the WWE in a lot of cases.
Did you see the remarks from William Regal that some people jumped on the other day, and then he came back with a clarification about the Bucks? He posted something on Twitter where he said just this brief thing of, you know, if you're going to apply to WWE, be a professional, apply properly, you know, don't. Here's my video on YouTube or whatever, da, da, da. And a bunch of people jumped on that immediately because they said, you know, oh, yeah, what, like the Bucks or your ticket? And he came back and he said flat out, I'm not referring to the Bucks. Those lads have gone out and become as big as you can imagine on their own. They don't need, because he had said something like, you know, don't, and also like, don't beg and say, here's your. They don't need to beg. They've, you know, wrote their own ticket. And I mean, that's William Regal.
That's high praise indeed. But here, it's just kind of stupid that they jumped to the conclusion, because, you know, the Bucks actually have tried out for WWE twice. I mean, so they did do it the proper way. So I don't know why they would assume just because they are on YouTube. Because
everybody assumes you're slagging on the indie wrestling favorite.
True.
But
I've been a Cody fan from the get-go, and so it has been frustrating at times being a Cody fan, because I'm a sucker for second-generation, third-generation guys anyway, of people that I liked. I mean, Dusty, I always was a huge fan of Dusty. I was a huge fan of Dustin, so it only stands to reason that I was going to be interested in Cody from the get-go. And thankfully, it turned out all right, because, you know, while I love Barry, I can't say I necessarily love, Kendall. But it's okay. I don't hate Kendall, but he's no Barry. Okay, so we got about 20 more minutes, right? No, 10 minutes, 5, 10.
Your turn, John. Go.
That's not 20 minutes. It's how many minutes is it? It's 10 minutes. No, it's.
Did you say 3 minutes?
It's 10 minutes. 10 minutes. It's my turn. Okay, so is the other one that kind of happened the other night and kind of opened up. I also posted it on Facebook, so, and it got not quite the kind of response that the Moolah thing did. But so Braun Strowman becomes the tag team champion, number one contender. and then the bar is not happy about that at all, as they shouldn't be. So, I mean, so now it remains to be seen if it's going to actually be Braun by himself in a handicap match against him, or is he going to seek out a partner or be forced to take a partner because of the rules or whatever. I see, you know, my friend Ray, I haven't had a discussion with him in person yet, but I know what he posted there. I know where he's going on this. And then RB kind of toasted in. There is this whole thing about how it's terrible for the tag division and it makes the tags look bad, so on and so forth. I can't necessarily argue that. And then, you know, everybody knows I'm a big tag team guy and I'm always supporting the tag teams. But really, they haven't been, other than the Bar, none of them have been booked well lately anyway. So it's not, so Braun winning this doesn't make anything worse or better, really, I don't think. But it made me interested. It's interesting. And the reason I think I'm accepting of it and I'm looking over it or glossing over it is that I just love Braun. And I love the whole concept of Braun. And I love the way they're booking Braun. And it's going to be a fun match. And it was looking like they didn't have anything for Braun to do up until now. So, thankfully, you know. And Braun and Cesaro and Sheamus in the same ring is going to be good. So, you know.
I can accept it to some degree. And I'm, you know, I've said before, you know, particularly my glory years of wrestling in my younger days, I was a bigger tag team fan than singles fan. But to some degree, it's not an exact parallel, but to some degree, the way they want to book Braun and the way they have sometimes used him until they want him to, like, you know, fall down in front of Brock Lesnar, they're almost booking him or treating him like this generation's Andre. And yes. I don't think anybody would blink twice if you had four of the best tag teams in a ring in the early 1980s and Andre the Giant walked into the ring and threw them all out.
Absolutely. Because he would do the same thing if it was a singles win. We saw what he did, the Elimination Chamber against the top ranked people.
Yeah. And it's because essentially that you've got all these guys working against him, but you're essentially in a mini battle royal, and in the battle royals, that you'd see that anyhow. A bunch of guys would look at Andre, or a bunch of guys would look at Sho, and it's like, oh, we got to team up, and you'd have the whichever giant it was clearing house, because that's what they did.
And it's so, not like they didn't get their own on him. They knocked him down to the stairs, all of a sudden, the other, and Anderson was beating the shit out of him at the end, you know?
Oh, his kicks in the face?
Yeah.
The only thing that I wouldn't want to see them do is have him – he's won his spot. Give him a tag team partner and give him a legitimate tag team partner. I don't want to see kind of like the joke partner. I don't want to see – give him a legitimate tag partner and do something with it to where you've got a monster team. Either pull up another monster from NXT or find a monster – to tag with him. I mean, even as much as they beat each other up, have him run with Kane for a little while.
Well, he's going to be mayor.
Big Show's about to come back.
But yeah, that's true. I've been hearing
so
that.
So you can have Big Show back up and then, you know, him and Show do it. But see, that I admit, I know how I would book it. I would have Elias be forced to be his partner. And that sets up, you know, because the chemistry between those two, I think Elias, and if things go the way they go, Elias and Braun may be, the new Edge and Cena, or the new Viper and Hogan. They just have this chemistry together that works very well. And I could see them, you know, going there and winning these titles for a short period of time, and Elias ends up losing, maybe even on purpose, because he didn't want to work with him or whatever. But anyway, he ends up losing because he's the weak link. And that just sets up more storyline for them to continue feuding on after that at some point. So that would be the perfect one for me, I think, as Elias being his partner. And so, because I mean, there is the humor there, but it's also serious. Elias is a legit competitor.
Yeah. Well, that it wasn't Elias specifically, but that was kind of the second option I was going with, was if you're not going to make a monster team that you can then build up your next tag team challenge with, then kind of do the yin and the yang. You've got the monster, now give him someone smaller, faster, more versatile, so that you've got that like double punch. You can keep everything going. But yeah, Elias would actually, that'd actually be kind of funny.
It'd be great. I think it'd be great. And the team that they're going to lose to is the Authors of Pain. Whether it's Elias, whether it's Cho, or whether it's Lars Sullivan, whoever, it's the Authors of Pain who win, because they legit, you know, would be a great team. People believe to beat them.
If I was going to book this, I would book it that Braun is the single tag team champion for a while. I mean, like, I would say he wins a match by himself, he holds the belt, and then the next night they make him have a partner.
And that's fine, and that works, too, because, you know, Authors of Pain could believably beat him by himself, too. The two big Authors of Pain guys being able to get him down for 3 seconds is certainly believable. You know?
Yeah.
He'd be the single owner of the tag team champions for 24 hours as they debut the Authors of Pain on Raw.
By the way, I remembered my joke, so I got to put it in now before we run out of time. You know, we were supposed to have been joined by Joe Crow tonight, or another one of our regular irregulars, but he was unable to make it because he was at a track meet in the frozen, frigid waste of Alabama, and he said at one point that he had his hands had frozen on. So, considering, I told him he needed to make sure he gets his hands. So, since he doesn't have hands, he can't pick up his hands. So that means he's going to have to turn to his wife and say, "Get these hands."
Thank you. I miss something along the way. I don't understand that.
What, get these hands?
Yes.
Yes, he said it first whenever he was just rampaging all through Raw. He was mad and that's when he turned over the diesel truck. He at one point he was in the backstage and people were running from him and so on and so forth, and he smashed something, and then he goes, you know, get these hands. You're gonna get these hands. Meaning, he's gonna use his clubbering fist to beat the crap out of who was it? I don't remember who it was.
Was that when he was feuding with Roman Reigns?
Oh, it wasn't Roman
or Kane. I know because
maybe Kane. Yeah,
doing
it was
both
Kane.
Of them
he
back and forth.
He wanted to face Kane, and that was the time when he actually went because the truck was actually the TV truck, the one that they control the TV from, where Kevin Dunn sits. But the actual truck part wasn't connected to the trailer, so he just picked up the truck or flipped over the truck. But yes, that's where it began. It caught on with everybody because it was just kind of different. Nobody had heard anybody say it quite like that. But yeah, it's that. That's what it is. It's, you know, these hands. It's meaning he's gonna clubber you to death.
I don't like it.
I think it's funny. Especially if you do it in the right voice. Get these hands. I love everything about Braun. I don't care. I love every freaking thing about Braun.
Oh, I do too. I do too. So before we go, I want to give a little plug for the Earth Station 1 Patreon account that they have now. We will be having some material on there.
Hey, I think we're going to have a thing about Roddy Piper on there, if I've heard of the grapevine.
Well, it wouldn't be Roddy Piper.
Roddy Piper.
It would be Andy Kaufman. Don't worry, folks, I'm over there, so I keep John, I try to keep him wrangled in there. We do an episode about Andy Kaufman. It's not very long, but it's something as a bonus, and they have a lot of great podcasts over there, so check them out. I'll put the link in the show notes. There's a t-shirt site. You can go there as well. There's some cool shirts, even with our name on it. So you can support the Earth Station 1 Network. They are a part, you know, we are a part of them. They are a part of us. And we wouldn't be here without them in this capacity anyway.
Woo!
So yeah, thanks, Jerry. Thanks, John. Do you want to plug anything, Jerry? You got needlessthingspodcast.com you write for every Thursday?
Needlessthings site needlessthingspodcast.com. Dave took away the site because he was having issues with the web provider. So it's needlessthingspodcast.com. I'm the Thursday writer. And then, you know, obviously Assignment Horror Podcast, which is me and some strange people.
That's right. I didn't even think of that. We're all on. Yeah. We should have called Becca. Hey, let's call her. No, I'm just kidding. No, but yeah, we do another podcast, which is the Assignment Horror Podcast with another friend of ours, Becca, and it's a great podcast, so go check us out.
And just for the heck of it, it's not coming out now. It dropped a week or so ago. I got to play around on Decades of Horror, the classic era, and we were discussing one of my favorite unsung horror films, a film called Night of the Demon.
Oh nice. Yeah. I just watched that month and a half, something like that.
Yep. A beautiful, beautiful film about dark magic and people trading a curse or trying to give away a curse.
As a surprise, I've never seen that. So anyway, take us off here, John. I'm putting you on the spot.
All right, folks, that's it. Go, buddy. Nothing more to see here. Go, leave. You ain't got to go home, but you can't stay here. Good night.
Roddy Piper. It's Andy Kaufman. We didn't even talk about Roddy Piper.
Well,
at all.
Know,
at all tonight.
They're two. Actually, he mentioned Roddy.
Oh.
At one point. You know, as a list of legends.
You know.
But yeah, I don't, because they're both huge favorites of mine, and they're both associated. I don't.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.